I'm Marco Werman, and you're with The World. After 10 years, it's the return of Putin. You know he spoke at the UN today, right? If you've been following social media in Russia, you definitely know. It was a big day at the UN, and Putin and Obama were headline makers. President Obama, in his address, touched on Iran, ISIS, and the ongoing crisis in Syria. We'll have more on that in a bit. But first, to Russian President Vladimir Putin. Reporter Charles Maines listened to the speech from Moscow. So why did Putin break this 10-year drought at the UN now, Charles?
Well, I think for him, this is at a very crucial moment. I think certainly for the domestic audience here in Russia, it was about sort of a change of scene, really. I mean, everything's been so focused on Ukraine. And I think there was a sense that Putin has really shifted hard in Syria, and he was looking to really get out of this sort of isolated state that he's been on the international stage for some time.
Russian Twitter, I know, hotly anticipated Putin's speech. What was the buildup like in Moscow?
Well, first of all, I mean, if you look at state television here, there was a Kela marathon was called here. So effectively, it was just went prime time, all the channels building up to this, having talk shows sort of depicting what was ahead. They also parsed Mr. Obama's speech as well, and that was kind of in the buildup. And I think I can probably sum up sort of the general line of thinking when one of the commentators said, you know, no one cares what Obama has to say, but the whole world is waiting to hear what President Putin has to say.
And so was Moscow kind of looking for Putin's thoughts on any specific subject, Ukraine, Syria, even just how great Putin is?
I think it was more about how great Putin is and how much he sort of reasserted himself into the international stage again. And that was really the message here. I mean, certainly in his speech, he talked on a whole host of issues that were key to him. But I think what was interesting, and I think a lot of people were looking for, were these details on Syria. In particular, you know, he was calling for essentially a grand coalition against ISIS, against ISIL.
Right. I'll ask you about Syria in a moment. But I mean, you listened to this speech in Russian without the help of an interpreter. How was the tone of it? Did it live up to the hype and what people in Moscow were expecting with this telemarathon?
Well, you know, I think he was, you know, Putin was good. He generally is a very capable speaker, but he wasn't angry. Sometimes we've had these speeches where he sort of assails the West. This was a sort of a more measured approach, in my opinion. My sense was that he was trying to sort of get smaller countries that maybe feel ignored by the UN or do feel sort of alienated by the U.S. policies to sort of get on board with Russia. And, you know, as you mentioned, Syria, I think that, you know, with this idea that somehow Mr. Obama or the West in general and Mr. Putin could sort of come to some accommodation over Syria. As you know, the Russians have put in military at a base over the last month, so they have planes and personnel there now, as well as drones flying in the area. Mr. Putin really made no attempt to explain that, except to talk about this grand coalition. But the most important thing is he expressed his real support for Bashar al-Assad, the Syrian leader, and made that clear that in his mind, this was a key component to any solution in Syria and in the wider war on terror in the Middle East.
Well, President Obama in his speech said the U.S. will work with any nation on Syria, including Russia and Iran. Just how could all this play out, considering Putin openly backs Bashar al-Assad, a man the U.S. wants out?
Well, it's tough to say, obviously, but I think that there were a lot of people who thought that Mr. Putin was coming to New York to cut a deal, essentially, with Mr. Obama and with Western countries. And that seemed to, you know, the presupposition was that this extended to his level of support for Mr. Bashar al-Assad, the Syrian leader. And I think after hearing his speech, it's difficult to see how they might sort of parse some kind of middle ground here. If anything, though, certainly in the Russian press, they've made much of the fact that Washington has given a little more wiggle room in terms of the time frame of Bashar al-Assad's departure, were he to go. And I think that's, you know, certainly what they'll play up here as well.
Just curious, you think the UN was kind to Putin this year and will be back next year?
Well, I think, you know, he doesn't seem, you know, having watched some of these performances where he kind of takes a swipe at the U.S. and makes his arguments about, certainly he touched on a whole host of issues, including Ukraine, sanctions. He talked about the environment. He seems very dedicated to the environment. And, you know, it wasn't that he didn't enjoy it, but he was very formal. I mean, I don't think there was a sense that Mr. Putin was having a really great time. And it's worth noting that he's not staying in New York for even the night. He flew in just a few hours before his speech. And as far as I know, he's leaving very soon afterwards.
Reporter Charles Maines there in Moscow. Now, all the talk about Syria at the UN today comes a day after the announcement of an agreement between Iraq, Russia, Iran, and the Syrian government. They say they'll share intelligence about ISIS in Syria. Earlier today, I spoke with Michael Gordon of the New York Times about the details of the agreement.
Well, the first thing that's interesting about this deal is that neither the Russians nor the Iraqis told the Obama administration about it in advance. And I do think that's striking because President Obama is here in New York to meet with President Putin. And one of the aims of the meeting is to coordinate better on Syria. And here you have an agreement which was not coordinated with the United States following a Russian military deployment in Syria, about which the United States received no advance notification. So it doesn't augur well for the idea of coordinating with the Kremlin. Is the Iraqi military put out the agreement, and what it suggests is that there's to be intelligence sharing about the Islamic State and who's joining it among several countries: Russia, Iraq, Iran, which has been supporting the Assad regime, and the Syrian government itself. And the Syrian participation in particular is a big problem for the United States.
Yes. So why would Russia leave the U.S. out of the loop on this?
Because Russia does not see the United States as a partner in the region. I think Vladimir Putin's approach is very much reminiscent of the Cold War. He sees the United States as an adversary, as a competitor. And I think in the Middle East, this is sort of traditional big power politics, where Russia is looking perhaps to help resolve the Syrian conflict on terms favorable to itself, but it's also looking to project influence and military power in the region.
So if intel sharing is the first step, what does Putin want to see as kind of the second and third steps in this relationship between Iraq, Iran, and Syria?
Well, right now we have sort of two rival coalitions. Apropos the Syrian conflict and really the confrontation with the Islamic State, the Obama administration in the United States is leading one coalition, and that includes European countries, it includes Turkey, I mean, it includes Iraq, it includes Saudi Arabia, a number of states. But now Russia is setting up a rival coalition, which includes itself, Iran, and the Assad government. And they've been trying to draw the Iraqis into it. I don't think they quite succeed in doing that, but they did manage, I guess, put enough pressure on the Iraqi government that they agreed to this intel sharing arrangement as a SOP. So, and now the question is how all of this is coordinated, and does the United States and Russia work together? Do they work across purposes? I mean, this is really the subject for the meeting here in New York between President Obama and President Putin.
So now we've got two coalitions, the Russian one in which Bashar al-Assad stays in power, another, the U.S. view, in which Assad goes out. What's this all mean for the Syrian people who are emptying out their country, as we see on European shores and in refugee camps every day?
Well, the Russians are a little cagey. Their line in private and in public is they're not wedded to one man. So what they tell the American diplomats and what they've told others is they're not insisting that Bashar al-Assad stay in power, but they're not proposing at this juncture an alternative candidate. So they're sort of playing it both ways. You know, I think that the tidal wave of refugees and migrants in Europe, I think the deteriorating humanitarian situation, I think the expansion of the and the resilience of the Islamic State have put Syria back on the front burner. It sort of temporarily had receded to the back burner. You know, the Americans have done a course correction in their policy. They're now interested in working with Iran on the Syrian conflict, and they're actively trying to work with the Russians.
Michael Gordon, the national security correspondent for The New York Times. Thanks very much.
Right. Thank you.